Welcome to the 40K Lorecast.
Welcome to the 40K Lorecast. It's me, John Barsotti, and Brad Chester.
This guy.
Today, we'll be continuing our coverage of the Raven Guard with the arrival of Korax into the Legion and his work to reform it in his image and their actions in the Great Crusade right up to Istvan V.
So, is this the biggest remake of a Legion or Claw? It's got to be at least close.
No. Really? I mean, the problem is Mortarion does a ton.
Yeah.
Gilliman doesn't do anything. Dorne doesn't have to do anything. Sanguinius were fine.
Most of the guys just jumped in and just made a couple things and went ahead.
Technically, it's actually the World Eaters because he did shove spikes in their skulls.
Yeah, but they were already psychos, so I don't think that there wasn't a culture shift.
There was a culture shift and a physical shift of shoving spikes in skull.
Look, the nails
probably.
I'm just saying, the Raven Guard completely became a different Legion.
Oh yeah, massive moral swing.
Maybe they did a 180 degree turn.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Well, not 180. Yeah, but a good 45.
It's more like 145.
They stopped skinning people, but everything else was kind of the same. Is what I'm getting.
How are you 45 on that? You're like, yeah, it's barely anything. Yeah, they don't kill people and hang their skin off the back of them. Yeah. You're like, that seems like more than a casual.
Fine. 52. 52 degree.
You're like, we implemented casual Fridays.
Exactly.
Also, they were stop skinning people. You know,
It's like we're not wearing ties anymore. We're progressive.
Potato, potato.
All right. 40K Lorecast, weekly show focusing the lore of the Warhammer 40K universe, releasing every Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern. Please do us a favor. Follow, comment. It really does boost us and gets us to more people and makes Brad and my ego feel better. Also, link in the show notes to our YouTube channel and Brad's YouTube channel, because now he has a YouTube channel. He's had one forever, but he never used it, and now he does.
So I was my only subscriber. I've never done anything with it.
Good job. You are your only fan. Anyway, if you like us and you want to hear more of us, you can also check out our other show, The History of 40K, where we talk about the history of the game more on the tabletop. Or if you don't really like Brad's voice, but you like my voice, or you know, you just like my voice anyway, check out Retro Recall, where I talk about old video games. Right now, we're in a run of some of the hardest games ever made, like Echo the Dolphin, The Lion King, and Aladdin. Figure out how that's a combo.
Why is Lion King the toughest game in the universe, by the way?
Have you played it recently? The monkey puzzle?
No. I'm not refuting you. I'm saying, why is the children's game wildly tough?
We cover it on the show, but they made a mistake. They tried to make puzzles. They're like, well, kids just want a button mash. That'll make it easier. But it's basically to solve a puzzle that's effectively random. That's not fun. All right. But if you want to support us, two great ways to do it. Way number one, go to our website and we have merchandise. A lot of them are actually pretty cool t-shirts. We have wine glasses. We've got pint glasses, everything. So yeah, check it out. Or Patreon. Patreon's a great way to support us or actually any other artist. I should promote Patreon better. It's a really good organization. But you can go to Patreon and you can give us, $4.99 a month. We will give you back this show ad-free along with the History of 40K ad-free. And you get to help us do a lot more stuff. Or 4.25 euros because we're going back to Holland. But this time we're doing Amsterdam because it's actually a city that I love. It is. If you haven't been to Amsterdam, go. Simply put, it's amazing. It's a hub for artists and musicians for hundreds of years.
So let's talk about the fact that love Amsterdam. However, if you're walking down a walkway, you have to watch out for people on bikes and motorized bikes going about 100 miles an hour.
Yeah, and it's awesome. So it's one of my favorite places, like genuinely one of my favorite places. So I like it because I also like museums. So Amsterdam has the highest concentration of museums per square mile, but not in a I'm trying to win a Guinness World Record sense. They actually have good museums. Like Rijksmuseum is exceptional. Van Gogh, if you like him, is good, but they actually have a Rembrandt. I like Rembrandt more than I like Van Gogh. You've got Stedelijk, the foam, tons of these stuff. It's just awesome for culture.
There's a lot of shit to do.
Yeah, and to Brad's, you know, fear, but my joy, you can ride bikes everywhere, which is cool as hell because they got canals everywhere. I actually ride said bikes, and it's fantastic way to get around. Place is
this
flat.
Guy rides a ton of bike. However, I wasn't prepared for those electronic bikes that haul ass.
Are you sure? They're also just really tall people who are really fit. They may have been.
That is true. It just might have been somebody riding a bike way faster than I can ride a bike. And I was like, that is clearly
probably more that. It is because he can bring the seat up, you know, above the first notch.
I don't even understand what you're saying right now. There's other notches?
Yeah, I really do love Amsterdam. I mean, it's also a beautiful city, but it's a Bloemenmarkt, which is where you have all the flowers. When the tulips bloom, it's crazy. And I know I covered this a while back, last time I covered the Holland, but I'm doing it again. The Dutch are fun. They've got great bars, great music, great clubs. My wife and I still talk about, there's a bar there called Tales and Spirits. If you haven't been, go. If you're anywhere near Amsterdam, go there right now. Tales and Spirits is a tiki bar. It's a pirate-themed tiki bar in Amsterdam, and it is amazing. Oh my God.
I want to shit on this, but I've actually been there. So
it's absolutely incredible. And the only downside is the Dutch language is a little bit goofy, so you got to be careful with your pronunciations. Like if you're trying to say, you know, Flugen kan keins en bolsen, and you came out with Flug in Heimenheimer, it's not going to end the way you want it to.
I've seen Eurotrip. I'm not saying that.
Flug in Heimenheimer. All right. Lastly, our Discord. Great place to come and enjoy stuff. With the launch of 11th edition, it's going to be a lot more activity in there, but it's still 12,000 people, so a lot of activity. We do have a painting competition that I'm hoping this is releasing before it ends. So if you, no, it is. This will release before the painting competition ends. Come in right now. We have a very aggressive painting competition.
You're not wrong. Counting before when we had,
it'll be right, tight. If you're right listening before. To this, and, yeah, if you're listening to this and going like, what? I have the model already painted.
Right. Yeah. It's really after good. After this cast goes live, it'll be 2 days before.
you'll have a, it might be a week, but yeah, that's going to go live and you're going to have a moment of like,
it's that
you don't have time to Golden Demon something, but it is a really great painting competition. I really encourage everyone and everyone who's already submitted, I've been looking at them. Wow. So anyway, but with all that, let's get off to Korax. All right. We left the last cast. Korax had agreed to go with his dad and join the Imperium.
Only after
he made his dad fix his home planet. Because again, if you're the youngest, you get whatever you want. And we're going to have...
We didn't point this out. It's not just that he fixed his home planet. He fixed the home planet and the moons. He fixed everything up.
Oh, yes. A complete top to bottom rebuild.
Yes.
Like really nice. It was a really solid, like, yeah, sure. Why not, buddy? You want the keys to the Porsche? Go for it. Enjoy yourself. You know? Now, we're going to cover a bit more of this in detail, but there's two kind of main themes around the Raven Guard, and they're really about special treatment. They get a lot of their own tech and their own toys, and the Emperor seems to be looking to Korax a little bit differently than some of the other Primarchs, almost as if he saw a destiny in him. I am going to spoiler alert this, though. GW drops this thing. Like, it was going in a really cool direction where Korax was going to be really important, and then they went, meh. I'm going over here now.
Well, let's talk about the timeline on this too, because of the fact that Korax doesn't join the Raven Guard until after a century of Crusade. We're a
century and then some. It was 125
years. Yeah, I would say it's a baker's dozen on that. So he's got what he wants to do.
I know you have a gluten allergy, but you know how a baker's dozen's worked, right?
It's just more.
That was a softball. It was a softball to make fun of your celiac. That's all that was. It's a baker's dozen. I don't know what bakers do. I can't have their food, but yeah.
Screw this. Same thing that I had to happen yesterday. I started a conversation, wanted to tell John that I did something dumb, and I went, John, I'm a pretty smart dude about stuff. And he goes, you really want to go there before you say the next thing? I'm like, at least let me start with something good about me.
Yeah. Anyway, but let's get into Korax. So Korax gets into this legion.
The things I do want to say that I think the Emperor has a plan because of the fact that the Emperor's very far into his own plan.
The Emperor had a plan. The problem is that the Emperor, like this whole narrative just disappears on us. We'll get there.
Yeah, no, I'm saying, I think that the Emperor had a plan anyways, like for this legion because it's the last legion. You know what I mean? So he has something else that he wants to do. Everybody else was doing things that have already effectively just been done.
Yeah, I still like it more that he's the youngest and the Emperor's just doing the thing you do when you have like six kids and you're like, I like the last one a lot more. Screw it. I'm not trying anymore. Whatever you want, buddy. Whatever you want. So, all right, let's get into this. So Korax joins the Legion and he has this kind of what the f- moment. And this moment comes from, they are masters of stealth like he expected and they made quite the name for themselves. But the Zerik tribe thing that was feeding them was causing a huge issue for him. Korax,
they were
is,
psychos.
and Korax is an independent idealist when it comes to the other Primarchs. Everyone wanted to shape their legion to match their own ideals and concepts. Not Conrad. Conrad didn't want to put any work in. The only reason, I think Conrad was just lazy, if I'm being honest. But what happens is the new kind of guard that comes with Korax doesn't align well with the original Terran legionaries. And
again, not even close. I think that
what I'm talking more in all the legions. So I'm saying Korax is more extreme, but in all the legions, you had the problem of the Emperor knew the basic genetic makeup of the Primarch, but that's all he had. Remember, he didn't know where these Primarchs, what ends up happening to the Primarchs is he's creating them with a special set of skills. Then Chaos scatters them to the galaxy where their kind of upbringing changes who they are as people. So the Emperor was picking parts of Terra to pull people from to most match like the being that he created in the lab.
Yes. And
Korax is one of the more extreme examples of this, though, where Korax then takes all those and becomes Batman. And the people that I think the Emperor was like, oh, this guy will sneak up on people and slaughter them in their sleep. And no. Batman doesn't do that. And so now he's looking at all these guys the Emperor made going, so you all suck.
Yeah. Weird. You know, let me get back to you because none of these guys are going to be your friend because they are not cool with you.
Yeah. And what happens is Korax's thing is he really doesn't like rulers who rule from like authority. He wants you to have more of a plurality, which the Emperor is different. The Emperor actually was trying to uplift humanity. I'm talking more like Lords of Terra. Korax would have killed the Lords of Terra over and over and over again. It's a good thing he was been in the warp the whole time. So when Korax gets and meets the 19th, he's watching them fight. He's like, this is awesome. And then they conquer and he goes, hold up, big pause here. What are you guys doing?
That's also, they had a lot of collateral damage and they had collateral damage that didn't need to be collateral damage. That's another thing they have to put in. Like he's watching them do shit for no reason.
And I think one of the big challenges we run into with him is when I redo the writings, it reminds me a lot of 16th to 18th century colonialism, where as these legions go out to the galaxy and conquer, the Emperor's viewpoint is much like the English throne's viewpoint and the Spanish throne's viewpoint, all the thrones' viewpoint was the entire world should bend the knee to me. I am an emperor. I am basically a god. In the case of the Emperor of Mankind,
he is.
True, actually. Yeah.
I was going to say, kind of a dick, but he's not wrong.
he's got a point, is all we're getting at. But what you get is some of the legions would act like the British East India Company. Others would act like the Flemish and even the French in the way that they would colonize. And the Zerik were one such. They were brutal when they would conquer. Their initial actions in combat were fine. Kill the leaders, sneak up, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, but it's the after effects because once we get...
The purge.
They started purging any dissidents, anybody that had any opinion that wasn't exactly this. If you weren't 100% on board, they just slaughtered you. And it's not even that they slaughtered you. They made an example of you on that.
Exactly. Not only do they do those things, but they start hunting down, trying to find them. Which it's the old butterfly effect. The idea is that if you believe something to be true and you actively try to pursue it, you will make it become true. So now they started creating dissidents because they were just such dicks as conquerors. Korax looks at this and it reminds him of Kievar, which he just, Three.
Like, and just.
Yeah. And Korax is like, nope, I did not join this to be what I used to be. And so he starts to change the leadership of the 19th. And by starts to, he does it very quickly and very, very aggressively by moving everyone all over the place.
Well, let's talk about this. We mentioned this before we started recording. We were talking about our pre-mojo, but Korax does...
Guys, our pre-planning is 2 minutes. Continue.
If that. We did talk about good restaurants also. I mean, that's part of pre-planning. Korax did a really good job and a really bad job of this. He was trying to set examples without being the guy that's flogging his leadership, but he demoted a lot of guys, and he publicly demoted them and put them outside of positions of power to show everybody that you can't do these terrible things. I will not stand for it.
Yeah.
However, he did bad stuff. Well, bad decision-making, in my opinion, because he sent some people, hey, you need to get the hell out of here. And that didn't work out, or at least.
Well, Arca's fall worked out. The example is a good example. If you guys saw the show Band of Brothers, what they did to the guy who played Ross and Friends, it's that concept of, some of you guys are good leaders. You are good this, but I just cannot have you leading troops because you will do a terrible job. And so some of them, to Brad's point, were like, hey, you're now in charge of cleanup duty. You don't get to ever see a civilian ever. You don't leave the ships. Full stop.
You were chief in charge of making sure toilet paper was stocked.
Yeah. But one of the most important ones he does, we think, because it is Arca's Fall. Arca's Fall was the Shade Lord, which was a prior chapter master. Arcus had been running the 19th Legion for like multiple decades at this point.
Yeah.
He was born on Terra. He's a Zerik tribesman, and he was brutal. Korax meets him.
He's what, 30? I think he's 30 years, right?
30 plus years leading. Yeah. Korax hated him when he met him because Korax saw in him
he sucks.
All the evil. Yeah, all your, but.
Let's be honest,
but Arcus Fall was light years loyal to the Emperor.
Yes.
Light years loyal to the Emperor. There's no chaos corruption in him whatsoever. So Korax had a problem, and when he solved it by effectively all the rogue traders on the upper part of Segmentum Obscurus kept just dying because they go up there.
Smoke showing them.
Yeah, because it's all bad stuff up there. And effectively, whatever humanity is up there is also kind of bad. So he's like, cool, two birds, one stone. Arcus Fall, you go up there. And he sent Arcus Fall with a giant chunk of 19th Legionnaires to just go deal with Segmentum Obscurus. Joe.
Also, remember, this is also a smaller legion. Continue.
Yeah, not yet. This is actually not. They become a smaller legion.
They become super. So they become a barbershop quartet pretty soon. Well,
there's two levels. They're still over 100,000 at this point. So when he does this, they're not 13th Legion, but no one is. But he sends Arcus Fall up there. And the reason we think this is important is this may be the origin of the Carcharodons. Now, the Carcharodons do have a chimeric gene seed. So it's more likely that this was the start of it and that they later collected more such loyalists who are either problematic loyalists or maybe even had been part of one of the traitor legions and wanted redemption, kind of like a pre-Death Watch type setup. But the Carcharodons go up there.
I do think he started taking in people that were all the HR problem children. They were, you didn't do anything wrong, but you did some stuff wrong.
Right. But Segmentum Obscurus is not where the ghoul stars are, but your Segmentum Obscurus and the upper part of Segmentum Obscurus is ugly. That's where you get a Crave, which we'll cover a little bit. You get a lot of very, very bad Xenos up there. So screw it. Go to town, guys.
I do like the fact that Korax doesn't just punish and restructure things without explaining it. He did have a talk about what he expects from his legion and from these guys. It's not like he just goes, you suck, get out of here.
Yeah, he explains to kind of like be Batman. The idea is that we're going to be a force from good. We fight from the darkness. We surprise our enemies. We do all this stuff, but we're not cutthroats. We don't just exploit weakness for personal gain. Now, fun story on that. Korax rejoins the Legion. Korax starts to reformat the 19th. And you know who took particular issue with this? Conrad.
Also, these guys insta hate each other next dimensions.
It's funny because Conrad had been there for a bit at this point. Yep. And the 19th Legion and the Night Lords, whose number I'm forgetting, sorry guys, I can't remember off the top of my head, whenever they are, 8th Legion, the 8th Legion, are kind of buddy, but like, oh, you know, like
it was competitive, like, though. Yeah.
Oh, very competitive, but it's a little bit of like, oh, hey, oh, you think you're sneaky. I'm sneakier, blah, blah, blah. And then Korax comes in and goes, oh, we're not hanging out with those guys anymore. Those are not our friends. They're out of their minds. And the bigger problem is
they also publicly pointed it out while Conrad was around. Hey, man, we don't want to be like those dudes. When you're like, dude, I'm in the same room as you. Like,
still get kicked out of it. I do think of like all those like 8th Legionnaires who were hanging out with 19th Legionnaires, thought they were friends, and they're like, coming up like, hey, I'm sorry, my girlfriend says we can't be friends anymore. that's kind of how this thing went down. Because Korax came in, if I see any of you speaking to one of them, I'm putting you on latrine duty. No. And so we'll get there later, but there's a lot of like Night Lords yelling, oh, so you think you're better than me? And the Raven Guard going back with, yeah, because we are. It gets ugly.
He goes, you can't talk too much shit to me. You're currently strangling a guy with his own intestines. Stop.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. So what's interesting, though, about the Raven Guard, though, is at this time, we do discover that when Korax joins there, there's something extra special about their gene seed. And it was described, I think on Reddit, someone wrote it really well, where they said the 8th Legion fights from the shadows. The 19th Legion are the shadows. The Legion actually blends in better and hides and disappears. They become sneakier once Korax comes in, and even harder to detect.
We've talked about this in previous casts of it, though. When people are closer to their Primarch, they basically have that psychic link, and he has
They power up.
Yeah,
so. It makes sense. But let's get into the how. So Korax gets in this Legion. And so, as we were saying, he makes these changes, but he also is there to uplift it. He doesn't do what Petarabo does, where he comes in and just starts cracking a whip on his Legion. Or actually, Angron does the same thing. So does Mortarion. A lot of them do this. But Korax comes in. He does this little shift of power, but then he goes in and says, we're going to make this Legion the best Legion. Not 13th best, but like second best. So the Raven Guard, they can blend in anywhere. They can remain undetected to anything but scanners, which, as we discovered, doesn't say much. Korax, though, decided to take that and then kind of lean in on it. So the first thing he does is Kievar. Kievar, which is what he conquered before, was a forge world. Now it's Deliverance is the moon. Everything's put together. And what I love this story, the Adeptus Mechanicus gets there.
Just
and
shows looks around. Up. In mass, by the way.
Oh, yeah. And they're like, oh, my God, this is the greatest place ever. We can't wait to bring you to the fold of, crap, a Primarch's in charge here. So this world is a forge world with Mechanicum on it, but it's not part of the Mechanicum because of Korax, which does cause some conflicts, by the way, because there's a bunch of STCs there and the planet are like, so we don't have to give those over to the Mechanicum? And Korax like, no. So like, cool. And so just don't.
One of the best parts is the Raven Guard get extra special tech, though, from
they
the
They do. And this is something that now Dorne gets this and Vulcan get this. I think Fulgrim might have as well a little bit, but they begin making their own tech. The tech marines start making more and more complex machinery to match the needs specifically of the Raven Guard. We cover this in the last cast with the Moritat because they made them special weapons and jump packs, but they also make this thing called the Shadowhawk. Everyone else has a Thunderhawk. The Raven Guard got a Shadowhawk, which was the Thunderhawk that was non-detectable by scanners, which again,
so
doesn't
what?
Say much, but sounds really cool. It's one of those, if you don't read a lot of lore, it sounds awesome. Then you read a lot of lore and go, so basically it's a regular Thunderhawk that just says no one in here, spray painted on the outside.
Yeah, and it's quieter.
Yeah. The other one I love is the Whisper Cutter, which is an abomination of physics, which is supposed to be an open-topped flyer that uses anti-grav engines. Why everything doesn't use these? I don't know. That's not important. And what makes it cool is like 10 space marines can ride in it and jump out of it. No one's aware of them.
You're going to make me angry because even reading the show notes and looking this up when I was ready to go, this makes me so annoyed. And it's not like I'm a radar expert, but why the hell would being open top make you immune to radar, man?
I've owned convertibles. I'm still very visible. It's not how it works. Like, I don't have them here in Michigan, but I live in California. I had it. And it was lovely.
Also, 40,000 years on the survey. Why are we using radar? But whatever. It doesn't work that way, but it's continue.
But that was just some of it. The other thing that they did was they actually started to have specialized troops along with this. So we covered this before. Iron Hands, Space Wolves, Blood Angels, Luna Wolves, Death Guard. Everyone had their own specialized group, you know, like the Justeran, for example. They would all, there's a thousand of these for
Sanguinary Guard.
And for with Space Wolves, the entire line.
I was going to say, Space Wolves.
All of them.
Yes.
All. Yeah. See all. And the Raven Guard, another one. But there was something different about them. So whereas, you know, the Space Wolves had the long fangs, which just meant was more of a veteran. Same with the Justeran. The Justeran, they were unique, but they were kind of plucked independently.
Yeah, it was just within, special operators, basically.
Yeah, within Raven Guard, you get something kind of goofy. The story on this is really cool. On Lycus, which is the moon Korax came from, as he was doing his freedom fighter thing, he had people join him. And the ones that joined him seemed to almost absorb some of his powers. They, too, were able to avoid detection when someone was looking at them.
Call it by its name, because it's cool.
Well, no, we'll get there later. Well, the Shadow Walk comes later. And what happens is...
But it's cool.
No, the Shadow Walk's awesome. So what happens is that these guys, when they get the gene seed implantation, actually pick up even more. They become like Korax, where they start basically phase shifting. And these were called the Mordethian. They became this ultimate recon force. So they were able to move and they were able to communicate in pure silence. The irony is that they made this whole thing about them, this joy toys of these guys, by the way, and then they're all dead because Korax uses them and starts sending these Mordethian all over the place because they're almost a mini Korax. And then they all just kind of die in the service. The only question mark of them, it becomes this whole thing with Mordethian. So the idea of a Mordethian is they actually can almost phase in and out, and they become the super soldiers. It is possible that this gene exists and kind of sits there. There's argument. Some people have made argument that maybe Kavion Shrike had this because some of the stuff he pulled off when fighting the orcs. A couple Raven Guard will get some time.
I believe this, though. I think that it continues on in the gene scene. This is, again, a Brad theory. But, again, all of the Primarchs have being Primarchs, but they also have their specific superpower. His, again, I mean, he's to the next level now, but like this was, he could just basically be effectively invisible. And I think he gives this to his sons. I think it is carried on in his gene seed. Some people get more of it than others.
Yeah, that's fair.
You even see it on the tabletop. The tabletop rules. So we got asked in Discord about this, but no. Raven Guard.
8th edition.
I'm saying now. How about that? Raven Guard currently is very, it feels flavorful, very close to what they should be. Close-ish. Yeah. As much as you're going to get.
Yeah, for a Space Marine faction, you're right. Yeah. Space Marine faction is just struggling with lore. Yep. Now, the other cool thing about this is they also get their own language. It's sign language, but it's still unique to their chapter. It's a completely silent form of communication. So they don't even have to use Vox to talk to each other. And it's so subtle that it can be performed while completely concealed, which is cool as hell. And then the thing Brad was alluding to earlier, I want to get to now, is wraith slipping. So Korax and the Mordethian do this more of a warp level where they basically cease to exist physically to non-mechanical eyes. But the rest of the Legion become masters of concealment. They can just, while wearing power armor, just disappear into the surroundings. This is where the Moritat, who obviously I love, that's how these guys will basically stand in the shadow of a hallway and no one will see the giant space marine there holding two Volkites and then just blast out and
This is not canon at all, but I really think this is more of a psychic mental obfuscate power than anything else.
I think they phase shift into the warp.
Either way, it's a psychic power effectively. You can pick them up on mechanical stuff, but you just can't.
It's like in Last of Us, if the zombies are moving around and you just duck, the zombies don't see you. Does it make sense? No. Is the game fun? Yeah. Yes. Is the game sad? Yeah.
Is the first one significantly better than the second one? Yeah.
I don't see the history. I think the gameplay is better than the second one, but the story in the second one hurts, man. Damn hurts. All right.
We'll be right back after a quick break. Starting a business is a massive challenge. You have an idea, but before you can ever get to doing that idea, you have to do 100 other tasks that are not that idea. One of the biggest challenges can be the commerce side of a business. I learned this the hard way, but finding a quality partner for your business is one of the most important things you can do. Companies that will actually support you as you grow, and more importantly, help you grow. For millions of businesses, that tool is Shopify. Shopify is the commerce platform behind millions of businesses around the world and 10% of all e-commerce inside the US. Accelerate your efficiency, whether you're uploading new products or trying to improve existing ones. Shopify is packed with helpful AI tools that write product descriptions, page headlines, and even enhance your product photography. Best yet, Shopify is your commerce expert with world-class expertise in everything from managing inventory to international shipping to processing returns and beyond. What if you get stuck? Shopify is always around to share advice with their award-winning 24/7 customer support. Tackle all those important tasks in one place, from inventory to payments to analytics and more. No need to save multiple websites or try to figure out what platform is hosting the tool that you need. Everything is all in one place, making your life easier and your business operations smoother. Start your business today with the industry's best partner, Shopify, and start hearing. Sign up for your $1 per month trial today at shopify.com/lore. Go to shopify.com/lore. That's shopify.com/lore.
Great Crusade. So by the time Corax joins the Great Crusade, as we said earlier, it'd been a century and a quarter. So Corax just discovered in 922 of M30. The Great Crusade began in 798. If I'm not mistaken, the Horus Heresy is 5 years after this. So he's not around for a while. As a result, though, kind of what we'd call the easy part of the conquest is over. The Rogue Trader fleets have basically mapped out as much of the galaxy as they can map out, except for the spots that keep getting blown up in. And so all of the human colonies that were found that would have peacefully come over, the 13th Legion had already visited, and they'd already done it. So what's left is worlds that are resisting compliance and or those that accept it and then revolt right afterwards. So Corax is coming into the Great Crusade at kind of a weird time. And this is going to test a lot of his actions and his morality.
So this will be getting a lot of morally questionable places to go to. And he's getting favorable treatment because he's the youngest, but he's also going into places that aren't giving the most glory because a lot of times it's cleanup and fixing problems.
Yeah. So one of the early ones that he gets tested on is Karanai. Karanai is a system that was a compliance mission taken on by the Raven Guard and the Night Lords. So yeah, this isn't going to go well. The system is made up of a bunch of small satellites with many hive worlds on them. They call it the Thousand Moons of Karanai, but it doesn't mean there were 1,000. It's terminology. The challenge the Imperial forces had was this collection of moons was really vast and powerful. So if you try to attack it all at once, it could repel you. So instead, they decide, well, what if we just island hop? They just stole this again from World War II. A lot of World War II stuff comes up here. And they said, all right, because the Kingdom of Karanai wasn't really a kingdom. It was more like a feudal setup where each moon was its own fiefdom. So Corax just goes, screw it. Start at the left and we just go all the way to the right and starts conquering them one at a time.
And he's bringing up, now let's talk about it. This is a
with
big
him force. And the Night Lords, which this is about like perfect for both of them.
Well, it's also a huge amount of Imperial army. You got a bunch of guard there too.
I feel bad for the guard. Doesn't go great for the guard.
No, I'm just saying it's a huge force of.
Yeah. And so what they're doing is they're just basically, because they're so stealthy, no one knows they're there till they attack. So they basically sneak up on a moon and then just hammer it. And that moon can call for support, but all the other moons around it go, dude, by the time I get there, that battle's over. So whatever. And he's just conquering them one after another until he gets to the moon called Zenith 312. Zenith 312. Yeah.
It just cracks me up because every time you have a problem in a lot of these, you know, places that have been out of compliance for a long time, everything goes well. And then you go, what the hell were they doing during the dark age of technology, the age of strife? Because they always have what the shit something. Weapons. And we're about to go into that because it's another one of those.
So on this moon, from the to Brad's point, from the golden age or dark age of technology was the animaphage. And animaphage, there's more than one of these. These come up every so often. These are a weapon. It's a psychological weapon that just basically turns all people into mindless beasts. And one on Zenith was very powerful. So Korax's Legion are attacking, and the Arch Comptroller, and I do love it's the Arch Comptroller, by the way, that makes me laugh every time. I don't know why. Unleashes this Animaphage. It has no effect on the Astartes, but the enemy troops and the Imperial army,
they had brought 60,000 of those. Yes. So, yes.
And it basically turns everyone there into 28 days later style zombies, where they just are attacking everything and they're fast. These aren't Poxwalkers, man. This is ugly.
Hold on. I'm going to do more Firefly stuff. They're Reavers.
Yeah, we get it.
You should watch it.
Everyone's watched it. There's four episodes. It's easy to watch all of it.
13. Thank you very much. Continue. And one movie.
And a movie. One day. Anyway, so while this is happening, the Raven Guard have to basically kill everybody. The troops they came there with, the enemy troops, because they're just mindless zombies. Korax, though, discovers that the Arch Comptroller escaped during this. In fact, he used this weapon to give himself an escape. And Korax loses his mind at this idea that this person would sacrifice his own people and others just to save himself. So Korax decides, I'm going to make this guy pay. I'm going to make this guy pay bad. So tracks him down, and the guy has moved to it's an outpost that's just kind of revolving around the sun. And Korax, this is where Korax becomes a little bit dark. He sends his Moritats onto the platform, but with very clear directions. They're to kill everyone but the Arch Comptroller.
The Arch Comptroller, yeah.
And then they're to disable, like, either, I don't know if it was the engines or whatever, basically kept it from floating into the sun. Then they blew up every single escape shuttle except for one. And the one they all got into and left. So they basically destroyed all the escape shuttles and left this Comptroller on this station by himself as it began a descending orbit into a sun. And Korax turns on the Vox, doesn't really say anything, and just listens to this guy as he's screaming, cursing at Korax, and then eventually pleading for his life. And Korax listens until the station really melts in the sun, killing the Comptroller. And then he's like, all right, that was fun, and goes back to the battle. The problem, though, this is where kind of a lesson learned for Korax, is he does this because he's just overwhelmed with rage. But while he did this, he'd effectively pulled the entire Raven Guard out of the conflict, which allowed for all of the other moons within here to refortify. Because the Night Lords had been there, by the way, which is, we'll get to them more in a second. But this then makes the rest of the conflict harder.
This is another one of those Conrad and him don't get along.
Yeah. Fun story. This is where they first really heavily turn on each other. During all this conflict, we've covered Conrad in the past. Conrad actually has a big issue with his Legion. Conrad discovers that on one of the planets, a bunch of Night Lords were just torturing and killing people for just sport.
Sport.
It was
absolutely no other reason.
Yeah. Yeah. The planet had surrendered. They were in compliance. They've been doing nothing wrong. Because remember, the Night Lords torture you before you become compliant. Once you become compliant, like, okay, cool, they're on our team. It was the Zarek who were torturing Post. So Conrad discovers that his Legion is just hunting people and it's going to be for sport. So then he goes down there and personally kills all of them.
All of the Night Lords that were doing that. And then goes, you know what? I don't want the other Legions to know about this because I kind of have a bad reputation already. And then just decides to bomb where these things entire cities.
The problem is that Conrad does an orbital bombardment of a city. Korax sees this and goes, hey, what's going on there? Assuming initially that there's a reason behind it, that, oh, there must have been basically, why did you have to kill the civilians? Then he gets there, looks around and goes, oh, you're an asshole. And the two of them get into it, actually. They're about to come to blows until one of Conrad's main sergeants convinces
Korax to walk
away. Yeah, Sevatar convinces him to walk away, and Korax does. But they don't like each other very much after this. Now, that's him kind of learning, maybe control my anger. The next one lesson he has to learn is more about the Imperium itself. And this is the Indrasul. And I like this campaign a lot because it has one of my favorite Xenos in it, the Crave. So, Great Crusade is nearing its completion. Most of the worlds that are now not in compliant are the outer edge of the galaxy. So, interestingly enough, up in Segmentum Obscurus, they run into a problem. Rogue traders find this section of, it's basically a system that used to be human colonists, but there's nothing there now. They're just a giant spire of death. It's a structure, it's miles thick, spanning from the surface, going up into space above it. And it's because the Krave got there. And the Krave are cool as hell, if you like D&D vampires, because that's what they are.
These guys are really powerful and really crazy. Also, their buildings.
D&D vampires. Yeah. I mean, this isn't even close. Like,
yeah.
Like, they just ripped this straight out. They're tall. They're space marine big. It's not, something's going to be even bigger. Have bat wings, a bat face, and consume the souls and energy of human beings to power themselves up. Yeah, vampire.
And they make these gothic wild structures.
Yeah. And the Krave are horrifying. And the Imperium, what's interesting about this, knows about this. The Krave, by the way, I should have mentioned, predate the Eldar. They've been part in the galaxy forever, and no one's able to snuff them out. So they get there, and Korax has a moral dilemma, because the Imperium knows very much so about the Krave. So this isn't like an LV-426 situation. They know what's going on here. And all of his advisors tell him, look, the Krave, they've killed these people effectively already. And the Krave are no joke.
Back up a little bit. Not a fun fight. Even slave, they basically made the people thralls to them.
And so And so what happens is they're telling Korax, look, we can just release a nerve agent into this place, kill everybody, and then we'll come colonize it later. Let's just do that. And Korax disagrees because he wants to save the people there. And now he's gonna lead from the front. He also brings the Therion cohort with him, which is this poor regiment that got assigned to them. Like, these guys could go through some rough stuff.
Yeah,
it sucks because if you think about it this way, like, you're an Imperial, this is Imperial Army at this point, you're an Imperial Army regiment, and you're assigned to the most stealthy of all the Space Marines, but you're not stealthy. The Raven Guard do something. Everyone looks on, hey, who just slapped me? And the Therian cohorts are just standing there going, you're the one who hit me. Like, it wasn't me, but all right, let's go. And they just get clapped over and over again. Yeah. And while the Raven Guard are sitting in the shadows going, man, that was right in the face. That probably hurt.
I like a lot of Korax's decisions, but trying to save these people was bad.
It was horrible. So what they do is they deploy in secrecy and start making their way through the spire. They hit basically dead center of the spire. And along the way, they discover a couple things. First off, the human population are basically cattle. They're all kept in pens. And the Krave, when they awaken, just come and feed on them. And every time they feed on them, they get bigger and stronger, by the way. So these are giant Krave. They've had control of this area for probably millennia, if not more. Eventually, the Raven Guard get to what they're looking for, which is because the Krave are a knockoff vampire. They're all asleep. They all sleep in the special, like, it's not a casket, but it might as well be a coffin.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so they have to kill them. Now, Korax here does bring in something special. They're called the Deliverers, which are his version of just staring. These are Terminators that do work. Serious work, actually. They are, by the way, not stealthy. This is the only part of his entire legion that's not stealthy. When the Deliverers come in, you're aware of it. They're probably closest to the Red Brethren from the Carcharodons. But because of their sneakiness, they were able to catch the Krave kind of off guard. They hit them, they bring in the Deliverers, and they start just wrecking the Krave. It's actually only a couple hours of firefight before every single Krave is dead. And the population is freed. So Korax...
Hold, please. Population freed, huge asterisk. One.
No, the population was freed.
Sure.
Part two is where this gets ugly.
Well, also, even though they were freed, these were the shady, hey, man, this guy's been feeding on me and my soul. I got about 10% soul left, and I'm pretty messed up. They were, I'm doing air quotes right now, freed, even without this next unbelievably sucky part that happened, because totally afterwards, Korax is like, go team, we freed everybody. And the Admech showed up, went, oh man, these guys are all corrupted. They can't be trusted. Let's just make every single person a servitor, which is a fate wildly worse than death.
That's the irony, is that Korax could have deployed a nerve agent and killed all of them in an instant. And instead, most of them are going to live for thousands upon thousands of years as a servitor.
Which sucks. Yeah. Like, so much.
Yeah. Now, we do get a happier story after this, which is Istvan part one.
Istvan?
Istvan part one is a good story.
It's true. I'm sorry.
Istvan part
two. The compliance of Istvan.
Yeah.
Yes.
Part two is not ideal. Part one's just fine. So let's get into part one. Part one. So Istvan was a massive system, multiple worlds, and they had thrived through the dark age of technology. And so because of that, it was labeled as neat. To be brought into compliance. Now, it could not just be destroyed. These people had to come over. What no one knew was that they were also Slaanesh worshippers. It wasn't hardcore Slaanesh worship, but they were Slaanesh worshippers. So when they meet the first kind of people of the Great Crusade, they're told about the imperial truth. And they all were like, yeah. No, because this is the same as Colchis, which is where Lorgar comes from. Super hardcore religious group who were really happy worshiping the Chaos Gods. But Colchis had a Primarch on it. So they kind of had to join the Imperium. These ones are like, Istvan, nah, I'm good. And so they say, no. And they, by the way, because they'd survived the Dark Age of Technology, this is not a backwards planet. The issue is that they need these planets to come in. So they look around and they say, all right, Ravengard, you bring us into compliance because not going to use world leaders, not going to use night lords, not going to use imperial fists, iron warriors, or space wolves, people who are going to wreck the place. Woo! No one who's on team, burn it all down. Oh, I guess no Vulcan either, because he probably would have slaughtered the civilians.
Oh my God. One time. One time.
Yeah, big time. So Korax, they go to him and say, we need you to do this. Bring these guys into compliance. And it makes sense for this to go to the Raven Guard because they're very good at just cutting the head off the snake. So Korax, though, does make a little bit of a mistake. He assumes that the people of Istvan want to join the Imperium. It's the leadership that's holding them. That's holding them back.
Yeah, it is not.
Yeah. So Korax and his legion do what they do best. They sneak into the system undetected, not saying much, and they launch this massive onslaught on the seats of power on Istvan. And initially it goes great. They very quickly overwhelm these guys, killed the heads of the military, the government, all the infrastructure is gone. But they kind of do that with the whole, they'll greet us as liberators
thing. They did not.
And they did not. And the people went, screw you, and they counterattacked. And the Raven Guard, they were able to retreat. This surprised Korax because he was expecting people just to be like, okay, yeah, leaders are gone. We'll do this. So now he needs a new plan. And this goes back to what we discussed last week, where the Emperor kind of likes lessons being learned by his Primarchs. And the lesson, again, for Korax is sometimes you have to kill a lot of innocents to save even more innocents. The greater good, again, of Hot Fuzz, not... it's the Hot Fuzz greater good. It's a very important distinction. Korax realizes that he needs to really kind of beat these guys into submission. So what he does is he's able to use a bunch of feints and tactics to get the military to kind of centralize in one main area. And this is his first attempt. It's called the Redarth Valley. And within the Redarth Valley, most of the military of Istvan was like congregating to fight back against the Raven Guard. And then he orbital bombards that thing into oblivion, and they're all dead. And he basically removes the military strength of Istvan III. But again, the resistance continues. He cannot get them to do this. So Korax slept with only one choice.
He just bombs the capital city.
Yeah, full show of power. And he comes in and devastates, kills millions with an orbital bombardment. At which point the people of Istvan go, okay, message received. Message received. We're good now. We're going to go ahead and join this Imperial compliance thing because we see if we don't, it's going to get a lot worse. Fun story, though, for Korax to learn. Now, let's talk about a very odd thing next. As we're getting closer and closer to what's going to become the heresy, the warrior lodges are growing. Now, we covered the warrior lodges. We haven't talked about it in a while. Brad thinks they're a good idea, despite not being able to point to any reason why they were a good idea.
They got corrupted.
They were not. They were a terrible idea from the onset. There's a reason no military in the history of militaries has ever done this. You don't do this. They're designed for insubordination. Just call them insubordination lodges.
King Arthur had it with his round table of equal knights.
Oh, really? Was he real?
You don't know that.
Sonic the Hedgehog probably had it too. What else we got?
Sonic probably made it work also.
No, it didn't. It doesn't work. It doesn't work. Anyway, so the Warrior Lodges, for those who don't know, these were things created by the Luna Wolves, but more pushed by Erebus and the Road Bearers. Again, Brad thinks that's a good idea. And the idea is
I think that was the good idea, damn it.
Uh-huh.
It's a place where any soldier could speak their mind as equals and say what was going on. I love that idea.
Yeah, it's not. It's a terrible idea because what happens is it's a place for a bunch of soldiers to complain and speak to their captains and leadership as an equal. And all it does is foment insubordination inside. That's why you don't do these things.
Well,
I'm sorry.
So much hater aid.
Because I've read the Horus Heresy. It's mostly the whole reading the books thing where you're like, oh, that's how that ends? Cool. I feel like I'm on kind of a factual journey here of how this thing works.
I read the books
out.
Too. I looked at it something wildly different.
Yeah, you read the books and then went, nah, I see how this could work. I mean, it failed miserably, horribly, terribly. But anyway, so within these warrior lodges, what happens is they become, listen, insubordination machines. It's a place that what ends up happening is members of legions complain about their leadership to other legions. It's one thing if the warrior lodges were within a legion. I will give you that. If the warrior lodges of Raven Guard were only Raven Guard, it would make some sense. But the problem is the Raven Guard members, the warrior lodge, will sit with members of the word bearers of Horus. So now you're getting cross complaints. And so the real reason behind these things was so that Erebus and them could figure out who was going more loyal to Horus and who wouldn't be, to help them start picking their legionnaires for their future revolution. That's why it's such a bad idea. Within the Legion, honestly, I could see the Ultramarines doing this and it being fine because it's the Ultramarines. They know how to do this. Same with the Space Wolves could have this. A lot of Legions could have this, but it has to be centralized within your Legion. Anyway, so this is going to be an issue for Korax because a lot of the original 19th Legion members from Terra all joined the Warrior Lodges. They love these Warrior Lodges. These are people who, they don't come from Deliverance. These are people who are much more interested in conquest, power, all that stuff. So that's the backstory. Now we get to Gate 42. Akum Sothos Cluster. So it's a group of worlds that was brought into compliance by Horus in the early days of the Great Crusade. Okay. But in the absence of Horus, this Xeno race of parasites that grow inside of your own eye.
Gross.
Gross. Gross. You know what would be good for that, Brad? Putting some eardrops in.
I do like how they're described because they start controlling stuff with the alien gestalt cabal.
Yeah. So the entire system goes into the rebellion and Horus loses his mind. And it's like, no, I am not having one of, because Horus isn't corrupt yet. I'm not having one of my biggest achievements go the way of the dodo. And so he orders everyone, come with me, we'll get them. So he brings the Raven Guard, the Iron Warriors, and the Space Wolves with his Luna Wolves to go and take back the system. They do, the initial battles are great. They conquer a ton of stuff on the outside and start moving their way towards a centralized portion. But when they get to the central, and Horus has a final attack plan. It's a pretty well-fortified area. So what he wants to do is, he's like, hey, we're going to basically, on three, we're all going to attack, but from different sides. So northeast, south, and west.
And Korax took offense to that.
Right, because Korax is looking, going, hey, like, I'm the sneaky chapter. I can just go and I can set you guys up. And Horus like, no, you're going to do a full frontal assault into a well-defended area. And Korax like, yeah, why?
With
like,
Perturabo in the background going, coward.
Oh, yeah. So this whole thing gets going. And yeah, to Brad's point, literally Perturabo starts just shit-talking. Oh, so you're afraid of battle. You're weak, all this stuff. And so Korax doesn't care for that. So Leman Russ has to get involved and be like, look, Horus is in charge, man. Because this is after he became the War Master. Like, just do what he says. And this ends up working out really well for the Raven Guard in a weird way. So Korax, by the way, does not agree with this plan. He says it's stupid. But as he gets back up and starts basically complaining to his legion about like, yeah, apparently we're going to do some stupid full frontal assault, blah, blah, blah. A bunch of the 19th Legion members from Terra start going, yeah, that sounds like an awesome idea. I want to show I'm just as good as a warrior as these those stupid Luna Wolves. And so Korax does the whole.
I love that he fall into clearing his legion of people that would have fallen to chaos.
He takes basically everyone who was in the warrior lodges and just puts them on the front line, goes, you guys said you wanted to do this.
And they
have at it.
And they all die.
They get slaughtered. Like 30, 40,000 of them just get slaughtered. This whole thing is terrifying.
And he loses.
Raven Guard.
Doesn't even know it, but he lost anybody that could have left Kirk Chaos.
Yeah. So timing of this is great. Korax is, so, but they become at this point one of the smallest legions. They go down below 80,000 at this point. But all the problem guys are gone. So that's cool. Now, there's one more very fun story we have to get to. And this is, all right, I will admit it again. I hate
these. Why do you hate the beat so much?
Because they're supposed to be a sneaky legion, and now your face is a foot longer than it's supposed to be. I just see them banging the beak on things while they're trying to sneak around. That's why it doesn't make sense. But people love beaks. People buy beaks en masse. So yes, whatever.
They do.
And that's fine. Honestly, I could see why you'd think they'd look cool. I don't agree, but I'm also building an entire army right now of Mark II armor. So whatever, I'm my own me. As we're getting into the latter part of the Great Crusade, the Mechanicum is always trying to improve weaponry. And they'd been on the Mark IV armor for a while, but the Mechanicum didn't like it. Their viewpoint was, this Mark IV armor is good, but we want to make something better. And the first change they make is, what if we put beaks on the helmets? No idea why, don't care, move on. The next one they wanted to do, though, was they wanted to actually lighten the armor up. Their idea
was not popular, by the way.
But their idea, though, was clever. Their idea was basically, look, the Astartes are killing machines. Why are we slowing them down? If we speed them up, they become more lethal. And a more lethal Astartes is probably more valuable than a more sturdy one. So this is like in modern 40K tabletop, Drukhari versus Custodes. I play Drukhari. Anyway, the idea was these guys will make them fast. They'll kill everything. They roll the Mark V out. And to Brett's point, everyone hates it. Vulcan and Petarabo specifically are like, this is the dumbest thing I've ever seen. I'm not putting this crap on. But the Mechanicum stand their ground. They say, no, we know what we're doing. This is good armor and you should use it. And after a lot of argument, they decide we'll do a test to prove its point. Petarabo kind of undermines everyone here, but it ends up not mattering. But we'll skip that in a second. The idea, Petarabo's idea is, well, tell you what, give it to the Raven Guard and let them go do some campaign in it. Because his idea was basically, the Raven Guard will do this, they'll fail, and as they fail, they'll call for support, and those of us in the regular armor will show up and save them.
And wreck them, yeah.
Yeah, and he picks an even better target. He says, you know what? And go to the Skalid sector. And the Skalid sector...
It's full of Eldar.
It's an Eldar section. So Eldar at this point are a huge problem. They're probably one of the biggest problems with Space Marines, because the Eldar are too quick for them. Spoiler alert, I guess that one's going to work out. And their weaponry is really good. Because the Eldar were more lethal than the Space Marines were. So this is perfect. Raven Guard are going to go up there. They're going to run into problems. They're going to have a bunch of heavy losses. They're going to call for support. We'll go in there and the Mechanicum will shut the hell up. Except the complete opposite happens. The Raven Guard are now lighter. They're faster. And they start out striking and fading the Eldar.
They also, you got to think that they also, the Eldar were completely unprepared for it because they haven't met anybody that's moved like this.
Because the Eldar are used to Space Marines. Eldar learn, and they were like, okay, these guys are going to show up, you know, bring in the Shining Spears, we got this. But now all of a sudden, these super sneaky ones are even quicker, and they start wrecking the Eldar. Wrecking the Eldar so badly that the Eldar retreat completely from the systems. The goal of this was simply, can the Raven Guard defeat the Eldar in some battles, right? And if they do that, then the armor is good. The Raven Guard don't do that. They're going to conquer the entire sector in this new armor. At which point, the Mechanicum just goes, so we're putting stuff into production now, right, guys? And poor Petarabo and everybody else go, all right, fine. Now, none of that really matters, though, because as this happens and we get our stupid beaks and all this stuff, the Imperial Commander, Vardis Prawl, who's the ruler of the Istvan systems, has rebelled. He was using, so remember I said before they were Slaanesh worshippers? Well, he had his war singers, who were psykers. He killed all the Imperial defenders there and turned the system traitor. The Emperor discovers this and immediately puts a call to Horus saying, get over to Istvan.
Which is an ill-timed call. Because
He was like 2 hours too late on this call.
Yeah, Horus just came back from the corrupt stabbing by the Nurgle.
Yeah.
The Nurgle's from inside the lodge, he got stabbed with the Nurgle sword.
Yeah, he's... Horus has just given himself over to chaos and gets the call saying, hey, go to this system because there's chaos there and go destroy it. And Horus says, on my way, Dad.
No problem. There will be absolutely no issues whatsoever here.
Yep. And with that, we're going to break because next week we're going to get into the Horus heresy and the after effects on the Raven Guard. Korax losing his whole legion a couple times, actually, and kind of Korax then leaving, and then what's the Raven Guard have gotten up to since then. I enjoyed this whole part of Korax, this next bit that they do, because Raven Guard and the Horus Heresy become kind of a cool narrative trick. We'll talk about that next week, but we want to stop there because the next bit's going to go pretty hard and fast and go well. But yeah, till then, John Barsotti, Brad Chester.
This guy.